Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Real Estate Pros, the podcast for real estate business owners, salespeople, and property managers, where you'll get marketing ideas, inspiring interviews, actionable tips and strategies to help grow your business. I'm Josh Cobb. The process of selecting a real estate agent is quite predictable. In most cases, homeowners call in two or three agents, each agent submits their appraisal, and the homeowner selects who they feel most comfortable with. Or unfortunately, in some cases, they select the agent who has inflated the potential sales price or discounted their commission the most. In this episode, I'm joined by Timothy Eaton, real estate coach, author, an outspoken advocate of change in the real estate industry, and someone who holds no punches when it comes to where real estate professionals are falling short. This episode is for real estate agents who want to be the only one invited in, and the strategies of top performers who no longer have to compete for the listing. This episode is brought to you by Steps, advanced real estate websites and digital marketing solutions. Find out more at steps.com.au. All right, so Tim, thank you so much for joining us here on the show today.
Thanks for having me, Josh. It's a great privilege. I'm a fan.
And for those folks who don't know who you are, Tim, tell us a little bit about your introduction to real estate and tell us a little bit about what a day-to-day looks like for you now.
Introduction to real estate is a really long time ago, Josh. My parents were what we called in Australia in the 70s specky builders. They would buy a small property, give it a coat of paint and try and flick it and make a dollar on it. So as a young bloke, I'd carry buckets of mud and all the like the trades assistant stuff, and I got the bug pretty badly. And that's in 1977. I did my first licensing course in South Australia. It goes back a bit. I was in and out of a lot of businesses in between there. I re-entered the business back in 2006, 2007. Quickly attained quite a successful level in the business, in the industry, and then went on to become a coach and trainer, which is really that's the nub of my day these days, is helping other folks do their job better.
Right. And is a particular focus on sales, business leadership? Is there a particular area that you focus on with your training and coaching team?
If I've got a preference, it's leadership.
Yep.
The nuts and bolts of the day of how an agent is to be successful are pretty well documented, Josh, and there's truckloads of great coaches in Australia to help folks with that. Do the work and the success will come.
Yeah.
If I've got a preference and where to work with, it's at the top of the tree. That's where the most impact is.
Well, I guess right off the bat, Tim, I want to congratulate you on the launch of your books, both Invited In and The Real Estate Matchmaker. I think you have a really super smart, just eloquent way of putting into context the way agents should want to be perceived by the public in your book, Invited In. And then in Real Estate Matchmaker, you've written what I would consider a utility for homeowners and salespeople to navigate the process of selling real estate in a really simple and easy to understand manner. Can you help our listeners understand, first of all, what compelled you to write a book not only for real estate professionals, but for the public as well? And also, can you help us understand what you, what you wanted to achieve out of both?
Oh, pretty big questions, Josh. You didn't tell me about big questions. Look, you've said compelled. That's a good word. It came about because I was in Port Macquarie about to do a training session with an office up there, and I must have been tapped on the shoulder by somebody recently, as we do get in the industry. Friend or family said, well, we're thinking of selling. What should we do and who should we call in? And it disturbed my morning practice pretty badly. I was watching the dawn come up in a beautiful town of Port Macquarie and couldn't get rid of the thoughts. Eventually, I figured out that there was 8 things that people needed to know. So I did then become quite compelled to go, look, the criteria that our friends, the general public, have been using to consider appointing an agent and what methods and methodology they should undertake are completely flawed. So the subtitle of the book is, yeah, the 8 key questions that nobody ever asks to guarantee you never leave money on the table. So I documented those. Well, if the general mum and dad homeowner were aware of these 8 things, as we are in the industry, they could be a lot better off. And if I can provide that to the agent, and to take a step forward to what you call them on this show, very show, Josh, real estate professionals, if those good people have the tool to engage with the homeowner on the questions that we know are really important, we've probably got a good chance of creating a better conversation.
Mm-hmm.
From a better conversation, we've got a better chance of an educated homeowner who's on the same page with their agent, making progress in the sale much more quickly because they're on top of the important decisions that they've got to make along the way. When they've been forewarned and foreducated with those things, they can make much more informed, much quicker, much more comfortable decisions and subsequently have a much better opinion of the service that they got from their professional.
I think it's a really interesting title, invited in. Is the word invited key to, I guess, the message in that book? Was that a deliberate statement?
Yeah, absolutely. I'd made a mistake in coaching for a couple of years. The mistake was based on a couple of little mixtures in a formula. One was something that the REIQ had come up with a few years back, which was a survey that said there was, on average, about 40 available agents, you know, logically could be considered for that particular vendor, and that there were about 2 agents that get called in and 38 don't. All we need to do, obviously, is become one of the 2. Piece of cake. Coach that. Then I heard John McGrath say one day, there's only 2 reasons you didn't get the listing. Second reason was they didn't think you were good enough value. That's logical. What's the first reason everyone asked? The first reason is you weren't there.
Mm. Yeah.
John's not usually renowned for being funny, but that's really funny. Yeah. And it's true. The first reason you didn't get it is that you weren't there. You were one of the 38. So just coach those 2 things. Mistake. I was wrong. Mm. The mission that we've got to be on is to be the only person. Every action we take and undertake is to be the only person that that homeowner ever considers inviting in. There is that's the split in the word. We can get called in as one of the 2 or 3, but at that point you're still tap dancing the same charade you always have to. What are your fees? What method of sale do you want to jam down my throat? Really, you want me to pay for marketing as well? Geez, you blokes want a lot, don't you? You know, as opposed to those great listings that we've all experienced along the way, which has come from a fantastic referral or someone who invites you into their home and says, we're in your hands, Josh.
Mm.
And there's a massive difference between being invited in and being called in.
I really wanted to ask you that question because I think it's an interesting title, and I think invited is certainly the word of the day when it comes to listing and selling real estate, right?
Absolutely. And it informs all the actions that we need to take. If you and I, as people trying to help our industry, are looking to provide information, then the first thing that they need to be considering is, what actions can I take that are going to ensure that I'm invited in, not just one of the 2.
If I can share a story with you, Tim, and for our listeners, I was sitting having dinner with the sales manager of a particular group a little while ago, and during dinner, he took a phone call from someone who knew someone who knew someone through who owned a property in I won't give away even the town, but basically it wasn't in his local market. It was quite not even in the same state. And he called this particular sales manager and said, look, I've got a property in this particular marketplace. You know, we've been told it's around that $7, $8 million mark in terms of value, the property value. Who should I give it to?
Yeah.
And I sat there thinking, after he got off the phone call, he said, look, I know exactly who to send that through to. Now, just to your point of being invited in, I get the feeling that that particular agent isn't going to have to really convince that particular seller of his fees and why he's the agent for him. Is that kind of what you're talking about when you're talking about being invited in, is having that kind of relationship with a particular agent, a particular group, where they've got a network of people who all work together to really, I guess, live to that notion of being invited in? How important
absolutely.
Is that?
Yeah, absolutely. That listing appointment for that agent who'd been referred at that point is completely different. It's so much more open. The shields are down so much. You're not there tap dancing like a dancing monkey going, prove to me how good you are.
Mm.
I'm sitting to you talking to you with our listeners can't see it, but my hands just immediately went palms up.
Mm.
I'm here to help.
Mm.
And as all great listing appointments have got in the earlier stages, you ask those great questions. You know, what are you looking to achieve? What's your previous experience been? How can I help you? You're not trying to prove yourself to them. You're hearing from great questions what their situation is. that guy's got a fantastic listing appointment. By the way, I'm a bit of a pedant on language. That's what that was. It was a listing appointment. He went down there to be appointed as their agent. He wasn't there to do an appraisal, an amateur valuer. He wasn't there to do a listing presentation, which infers you just sit there and be quiet for about 40 minutes and I'll show you how smart I am.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was there invited in and able to have a really easy and comfortable conversation. I guarantee also that that would have been a terrific list and sell process because the nature of the conversation between the client and the professional, much more open.
Something I talked about on a previous show with Tanja Jones, where we were talking about a particular experience she had with an agent where they sat down at the table and he pushed his listing kit aside and just pushed it aside and didn't even get into it. She'd had two agents in before that were basically, here's the testimonials, why you should list with us, and he just pushed all that aside and said, how can I help? You know, what would you guys love to achieve? There's a big difference, isn't there?
I confess I heard that interview, Josh, and I wonder whether Tanger actually gave that agent enough credit. She hinted at it, but she did ask her, what would you love to achieve?
Yeah.
Now, that's the right word for that particular client. He was talking her language.
Yeah.
And doing the right thing, asking the open questions, the questions in the first place, which is what you need to do. We need to diagnose the situation. As a great doctor, why are you here? What can I do to help?
Yeah.
Not tell them, oh, hi, Josh, you look like you've got a spot in your forehead. Just tell me, I'll tell you all about how to fix it, mate, and how clever I am in the process. And no good.
Well, look, you've mentioned to me off air that real estate could be summed up in the first four pages of your book, The Real Estate Matchmaker, Tim, and with the four hieroglyphs and what you've termed the five rules.
Yep.
Can you unpack both of these for our listeners? Because I think a lot of people, when they think about it, would say, you know what, real estate is probably that simple after all.
Well, sure, this is not to disappoint them, but it is that simple. Yeah. I've actually also said in the book, please don't stop here. You won't get enough out of just reading page four and page five. Incredible serendipity in that book is that the four hieroglyphs land on page four and the five rules land on page five. Completely unplanned. I'll tell you with a story. I know you like them. I've been an average agent, average listing appointment ratio, pretty good. But not great, fabulous. And I stumbled across these four little drawings that I'd started to pencil on a piece of paper in front of a vendor and five rules, which are effectively five rules that I'd stolen from a great old LJ Hooker agent. And I was invited in, property that had been on the market for a little while, it was about to expire. The agent who had it was pretty good. And he said, the vendor said to me, look, and we're not too happy with where this is. So rather than, I pushed the stuff aside and Lennon said, well, let's have a look at where you've got to and why. And as he was talking to me, this vendor, I just put these little four squiggles. One is a little house. One is a little circle of a buyer pool. Third one is a graph that shows the number of inspections over a period of time. And the fourth one is what we call a price triangle. And as I showed him his life on these four squiggles and then said, look, what's happened is these five rules are buyers look at an area first, then they'll look at a price range. Then they'll, over time, they'll spend a little bit more than they first started looking at. And number four is really important, which is that you get the best offers when the property's in its first marketing phase. And the last one, the fifth rule, is the longer the property's for sale, the less anybody expects to pay for it. And you've been on the market now for 10 weeks. So having just put those little squiggles and those things on, it took me about 10 or 15 minutes with this bloke, and I was pretty mindful of he'd had a listing presentation before, and he just leant back, and I remember he and his wife leant back in the chair and he said, we got more from you in 10 minutes than we got from the other guy in 10 weeks. So those little squiggles for me began to then go, oh, I'm onto something here, something that you and I now know in this part of the 21st century is that graphics are a great way to communicate with people. In your social services, I know I'm certain you'll be providing tremendous infographic tools. That's what these things are. They're just basically infographics. Our brains work in such a way that we're very greedy on energy, and the cheapest way we can take the energy in, the better. So if you can do it with a few pictures and tell a story around it, you'll make a much greater connection with it. And the reality is those four hieroglyphs and those five rules, you can tell a person exactly where they're at in their property cycle as they go through.
I don't think you can underestimate the power of that sort of visual to explain what you're trying to get across rather than just flicking through an iPad. It's pretty powerful stuff to have just the old pen and paper, right?
Depends on who you're talking to.
For sure.
Again, you've got to try and pick your personality type of the person that you're pitching to, and often that's a him and a her, so you've got to try and cater it a bit to both. But if you've got it on the iPad as well, then you can, you're servicing the person who's the really hyper visual, show me the toys stuff. For me, maybe it was also affected me because I know whenever I've been with a salesperson who's got the pen out on the paper, I just give up.
Yeah.
That's just like, yeah, where do I sign? Mate?
Yeah, I think it's really important to stress that it depends on who you're talking to as well. if you're sitting down drawing things and that's not how they process information, you've got to pick your crowd. But something I'd just love to ask you this question, Tim. The book Real Estate Matchmaker, if a homeowner was to get their hands on it, I think is a bit of a utility for them to think, well, look, if it is that simple, hey, why don't I sell my own property?
I think it is that simple to understand, but there's still an enormous amount of project management that goes into it. And that's one of the things that I'd consider as I went through it, that, yep, I hope that by the end of this book they realised it's a relatively simple process, but there's still a lot to get right. And I don't want to do it. I still need to be in the hands of a professional negotiator, which is probably one of the keys. As we roll through, we all know that professional marketing is something that's often pretty much shared amongst agents in a particular region. They often use the same photographers. We're all using the same domains, literally, to list their properties with. At the end of the day, the unique selling difference is always going to come down to the behaviour of the agent and their ability to negotiate.
For sure.
And that's in either method of sale. And I say negotiate, you can negotiate private treaty-wise, and you can negotiate. Great agents negotiate really hard in auctions as well. And that's, again, it's not so easy for a homeowner to list and sell their property as an auction themselves and really be a great negotiator. There's a great agent role. I'm still auctioning every weekend, Josh, and I just love working with the great agents who are negotiating their pants off on the auction floor. And right now in Sydney, we're at that point of the market where the buyers have just overnight claimed the power again. So you're finding agents who've got to be great negotiators on the day, on the floor. Mum and dad homeowner are not going to do that, mate.
No. If I can share another story with our listeners, and my parents are actually selling their house at the moment, and they've decided after three agents that they've called in, I wouldn't necessarily say they've been invited in. They haven't been referrals or anything like that. They've been agents with profiles in the industry in their local market. And they've decided after three attempts to sell their home, they've decided to give it a go themselves and use an intermediary to facilitate all of the advertising, marketing, and that sort of thing. So I won't share the name of the company that they're using, but basically they're in control of the listing. My parents, I mean. So it's quite interesting having that conversation with my father. Now, you know, we obviously work with a lot of agents. And I'm constantly asking him why he went through that process. And his comment to me was quite interesting. And I shared this with you off air, but thought I'd share it with our listeners. He said, look, the only reason that I didn't want to list my property myself earlier was that I didn't think I could list it on the major portals, which is where the audience is. And now typically agents would have you believe that the reason why you list with an agent is because of their negotiation skills and that sort of thing. And obviously navigating all of the paperwork and legal side of the process. But his comment to me was, look, no, I'm confident that we've got solicitors to deal with that. I'm confident in my negotiation skills. I've been in business for a long, long time. He ran a very successful business here in Australia and overseas. So his only concern was that he wouldn't have access to the audience. He wouldn't be able to get that listing to as many people as he possibly could. But when he found out that there was an intermediary that could advertise his property on the major portals, he immediately jumped at the chance. And now they've got it on the market for a couple of weeks. Open homes have been fantastic. Response has been great. It's a private treaty sale, of course. And things seem to be going very, very well. And finally, when I catch up with him at dinner, he's not hassling me about agents that he's had in the door. He's quite proud of and happy with the process. So how long will it be before that process becomes a little more easier for homeowners to do it themselves if they feel confident in their own negotiation skills. And I guess just on the back of that, you know, what can agents really do about it?
Well, the answer to the first part is we're already there, Josh.
Yeah.
It's interesting. It just happens to be Josh Cobb's dad is doing it. He's probably a bright bloke, so it's not surprising. It's also, and we'll have real estate agents listening to us, so I hope they'll forgive me when I say I don't blame him. There's a lot of reasons to go, yeah, really? Why do I want to give this guy 15, 20 grand, you know, 10 grand? I could probably do it myself. It's unfortunate that he probably hasn't had anybody who's created a relationship with him over time that's been able to bring information to him to allow him to understand that there's anything up to 5, 10, 12, 13, 14, 15% difference in the outcome of money at the other end and peace of mind. That's happened because nobody's introduced themselves to him. Nobody's down the track brought him some information that he's been able to value. To answer your question, yeah, I think it's inevitable. Unless agents are extremely proactive in creating relationships with people where someone like your dad perceives a sense of value and I feel that you are useful and valuable to me when you bring me knowledge that I was unaware of. I feel you are useful and valuable to me when you reduce my fears. Mm. I feel you're useful and valuable to me when you create in me a sense of leadership that you are taking over my project and my problem. Mm. That you're taking, I feel protected under your wing. I don't, as a human being, we don't like surprises. Mm. So I value you when you show me the probable road ahead. Uh-oh. Yeah. And the conversations we're likely to need to have.
There's no ifs or buts about it, Tim. There's certainly a perception in the market about agents. How can real estate agents, in your opinion, improve that perception for the people that matter most to their business? And do you think there's any short-term threat from some of these platforms, like we've spoken about, essentially negating the need for an agent involvement?
I think there's a long-term threat, Josh, not just a short-term one. I think it's imminent, absolutely. And to our listeners out there, we're about to go into a period of time of devastation in our industry, with most of our property clocks getting to the warmest to the hottest zones. Sydney, Melbourne, Adelaide's warmed up. Brisbane is approaching a good heat spot. The two big cities, Melbourne and Sydney, they're about to go into difficult times. The last couple of years, anybody could sell reasonably comfortably in those environments, not too hard. Put a sign up, auction it, you're going to get a pretty good result. We're heading into territory now where agents have got to be much more skilled. They've got to be much more prepared to have much more difficult conversations with their clients. They have to have pre-educated the client on the basis of those questions going forward. I believe that answers the first part of your question, which is how do we create a sense of value in the perception of this agent? What perception do I have of an agent? Why should I consider using them? Because this person has shown me the implications of having too high a price. They've shown me the implications of having a really modest or almost nothing marketing exposure. They have shown me the implications of the method of sale. Those five rules, the four and five are so obvious and so simple. The last one is the longer that anything's for sale, the less anybody expects to pay for it. That's the subtitle of the book, Everything Sells Best Fresh. Mm. Go back to the one before it, you're going to get your best offers in the first marketing phase. How do we enhance the perception of value in an agent is that they've got to bring that knowledge to the homeowner, and they've got to do it. Oddly, our listeners can't hear this right now, but you and I can see each other on a little screen. It's as close as we can get to seeing what my eyebrows are doing. It's as close as you can see to see my teeth from time to time. That's what agents need to do. They need to get face to face, belly to belly, palm to palm, engage in the human connection, which is what we do business with at the end of the day. I do business with the person sitting at the table with me. I'm comfortable with the brand, but I'm doing business with the person. That's how they're going to do it. Get face-to-face, bring knowledge to them, show a sense of leadership. I'm going to take you in my loving arms and pick you up and put you down in about 3 or 4 weeks' time and you'll be able to move on.
Well, Tim, I'd love to shift gears now and turn the spotlight onto moments of your career that have made you who you are today. And we often hear the 20,000-foot view of someone's success in real estate, but here on the Real Estate Pros podcast, we want to take it down to that ground level of actual moments in time where you've either failed or felt like you'd failed or felt like you'd succeeded in your career. So with that in mind, can you take us to an exact moment in your real estate career where you felt like you'd failed? Tell us what happened and how it made you feel.
Oh, it's going to cause me pain, Josh, and bring up things from the past. Well, I'll take a little bit of issue with you. And again, we did speak slightly off air for a moment. When I had hair, and my haircut's much like yours, as you can see, it was long and I could have been deemed to be a bit of a hippie. So I'll tell you that there's no failing, Josh. There's nothing that we can do on the planet as a failure. We can certainly end up with outcomes that we don't like or weren't expecting. But the universe as it stands is perfect. Everything that turns up in our lives is a perfect sum of an equation. 1 + 1 + 1 always equals 3. So while I've caused myself some dreadful distress and make some dreadful mistakes, I haven't considered them as failures, and I would ask our friends out there to do the same thing. If you just don't like the outcome, just going to change your formula.
Well, just to pause you there for a sec, Tim, is there a particular story or a deal that you're working on or any moment in your career where you felt like it was a turning point, where you took lessons out of it? Was there a particular time, an exact moment that was something like that for you?
Yeah, I made a mistake in not – well, we can take it as an interesting loop on a real estate office problem. I made a mistake in not making a greater endeavor to purchase a property that a real estate agency that was in strife. I'd been there as a sales manager. We'd taken that business. Actually, we'll wrap both up, Josh, success and failure. Sure. Gone into the business where it was the principal and a PA. It'd been a very successful business, but he had a bunch of what we call gorillas in there, had lost control of the process and had to rebuild it from scratch, so fired everybody. It took ages to do it. I got there. Between the two of us, the principal and me, or the almost immediate sales manager, we grew the team over across about 18 months to 10 agents. And then one Christmas, and about 30%+ market share, had done really well. We had a great team and a great engine. It was working really well. I'll tell you how in a minute. And then one Christmas, the partnership, the ownership of that business came unstuck and it just fell apart. It was like a big ship crashing into the rocks and it just fell apart completely. The principal left, I left, and over the period of the next 18 months, almost everybody else left. And that business is now dead, shot and gone, wound up. My mistake was I didn't have enough belief in myself at the time to stand up and take over that business when it hit the fan. I just didn't quite believe that I had enough experience and I just didn't think I could get the finance process together. History shows me I was mistaken on both cases, and my mistake there is I probably let a bunch of good people go adrift into the world who'd done their own hard yards to become very good, to understand that they needed to have a goal, to work with leadership that was supportive. That lot went pear-shaped. And really the nub of it was at that point, I didn't quite have enough confidence in myself, Josh. That was my failing. And that's often, it's a key tripping point for so many people in their lives, is that at some point they just don't have enough faith in themselves, enough belief. Mm. And I could talk to you about belief for hours on end, mate.
Well, take it to the other end of the spectrum, Tim. Was there another moment in time where, in your career, where you felt like you'd succeeded or you were on the right track to you felt like you were on the right track to growing your real estate business, and take us there with you, a particular moment in time where you felt like that was the case?
Yeah, I'll just use the same office and its success before it hit the fan, because it went from nothing to 10 agents and 30%+ market share and a system. And the way that it did it is the way that I would advocate for everybody in their real estate businesses to have a really good look at. It had a really solid sense of leadership. The people in that office understood that the principal and I were there to serve them and to help them. We were not competing with them. Every day we'd set up religious practices, adhered to consistent practices which removed the sense of stress from the team. Every day people who were relatively new in the business did role plays and training. Just getting the words role play in real estate can terrify people. So we got rid of that. We just call it saying the words out loud. Josh, this morning we're going to say these words out loud. I can do that.
Yeah.
We had role-playing right from the day. We had face-to-face meetings with each of the people in the office, and we made sure we understood what their goals and desires were and had a structure around them to support them to achieve them. We worked, I developed a tool called 5 A's. What's your, how's your attitude? What actions are you taking? What are the achievements you're getting? What actuals have you got on that whiteboard? How's your ability? Do we need to work on some skill stuff? And are you being accountable? Around the success around that model of a leadership, supportive of a team that was really habit-driven, is not really surprising. That, that the nature of habit, doing the right things over and over and over, is not new philosophy. I mean, Aristotle wrote about this 2,000 years ago. There's been a couple of great books, you know, another 100 years ago, William James's book on habit, Charles Duhigg's book on habit. Habits, doing the right things over and over. I could see success in any real estate office doing exactly the same thing, having principled leadership that's really well supported to the team underneath it, offering great ability enhancement. How can I help you to support you with your training? How can I help you to support you with the achievement of your goals? That's the success plan for any business, let alone any real estate business.
Well, Tim, take us to today. What are you working on right now that's getting you excited?
I'm excited because I didn't figure I'd end up with author in my bio. It turns out I like writing. Something that Peter Drucker wrote years ago, it's really important for us to learn about the best way that we learn. Turns out for me that I learn best by writing. If you haven't read that little treatise from Peter Drucker, I would advocate everybody have a read of that. To learn how we best learn is one of the greatest skills that we can have individually, and we all learn differently. So what's exciting for me now is to help people in my mojo sphere, folks who we work with, using those 5 A's, helping them to believe in themselves, helping them to take the actions that they need to. So the day is pretty much working, as it says in the front of Invited In, finding a customer, introducing myself to new people, and keeping a customer. The guys who are already Mojo clients, making sure that they're on track to their successes. What can we need? What can we do to enhance their success and their happiness? I'm 57 years old, Josh. I don't think I've ever felt more alive and excited to be alive. It's a fantastic time.
We've reached one of my favourite parts of the show, Tim, where I'll ask you 5 quick questions and get you to come back with 5 quick answers. Are you ready?
Hope so.
Name one person who has been an inspiration throughout your career and why.
Just one. I'm not going to do that. It's all right. I'm going to hybrid them and tell you why. The best advice I've got in my life and my career has come from my parents. It might sound a bit corny, doesn't it? I've just picked my parents perfectly. One's a bit deep and meaningful and the other one's a doer. He's a get on with the guy. Mum always said, just believe you can do it. And Dad said, do the work. The person who I think exhibits the greatest ability to have helped people believe in themselves and to take massive action, I'll ask you, I wonder if you know, in the last 25 years, who do you think on the planet has been the person who has enhanced the most belief in people and encourage them to take the most massive action?
I think it depends on who they follow, but I would have to say parents.
Parents, absolutely. That, for me, was encapsulated, it might sound corny, but Tony Robbins, that he is able to get so many people to believe in themselves and to take massive action. I just don't think there's a better one on the planet for that. Mm. So great inspiration for me.
Tim, what is your favourite thing in the world to do when you're not at the office?
When that hair was long, I was a guitar player, Josh.
There you go.
Yeah, music, writing music. For me, it's the greatest sense of presence and flow that I can have. I just get absolutely lost in it. I love it.
What is your favourite business book that you've ever read and why?
That's an impossible question for me because you probably know I have an extraordinary library. So what I might do is give folks a great place to start. A great book by an American fellow named Jeff Olson is titled The Slight Edge. It just talks about doing the little things right over and over. It talks about the basic premise of what you put in, you get out. It's a fantastic starting book that's going to show you that for every action there's an equal and opposite reaction, absolutely, and that everything that we do counts and everything we do compounds over time. And the things that I'll give, there are two great messages in it. Most of the things that we need to do to be successful are not huge, but they're also easy not to do. So the premise in the book is it's easy to do, but it's easy not to do.
Mm.
But everything that we do counts and everything that we don't do counts as well and compounds. So it's a great book.
Tim, what is your favorite technology or online resource that you use daily to help run a better business?
Two parts of the question. My favorite technology is a fountain pen, and I take it out every morning and write down what I'm doing for the day and why I'm doing it. And it's also, I adopted that about 30 years ago because I read an article on how green it was. You'd have to put them in the landfill. I've been using the same pens for 30 years. I love Evernote. That's a tremendous resource for me, for somebody who's always got ideas falling out of my head. Being able to use Evernote on all of the devices that we've got, rather than simply say, yeah, my favorite device is the two SIM phone or the iMac, whatever. So the application, I love Evernote.
Well, Tim, it's often said the success of a real estate business is measured by how many properties they sell or how many properties they manage. If you had to choose one thing that prevents people in real estate from achieving success, what would it be, and what would your advice be to overcome it?
It's a great question, Josh. It's really, sadly, that people have never been introduced to the power of goal setting and a plan to achieve it, so that they don't have any goals in the first place. And it's not, I mean to say that that's, it's not a terrible thing for people. They just haven't been introduced to it. Anybody's been introduced to the notion of getting your pen out, writing out what you want in your life, and then setting about doing it, they're going to do it. So they either have got no goals or no belief that they can achieve them. That was where I tripped up myself. Therefore, they spend way too much time on things that don't help them succeed or help their clients succeed. So if you can reverse engineer and answer that question, what actions are, I ask this question all the time with folks, are your actions congruent to your goals? To answer that question, you have to have goals. So then say, okay, what is what you're doing logically going to take you towards success with yourself and your client? So short answer, no goals, no belief you can achieve it.
Well, Tim, I have one last question for you to leave our listeners with some motivation for the week ahead. What's your favorite success quote, and how do you think people in real estate can relate to it?
Feeds back to what I just said. Are your actions congruent to your goals? The best saying you can have is, and as you sow, so shall you reap, Josh. It's absolutely the corollary of Sir Isaac Newton's third law, which states that for every action there's an equal and opposite reaction. As you sow, so shall you reap. You'll get out what you put in.
Well, listeners, you can find all of the resources that Tim has kindly shared with us today, along with all of the show notes, by visiting our website at steps.com.au/podcasts. Well, Tim, on behalf of our listeners, thank you for your time, knowledge and advice today, all the time that we've spent off air as well. I know that people are going to resonate with the content you've shared. How can people get in touch with you or find out more about your business?
Thank you, Josh, and thanks for the opportunity. The business is called Mojo Real Estate. You can just do the www thing with that. They can find the book there as well. There's a contact sheet form there. I'd be very happy to talk to anybody who resonated with what I'm hearing today. And if I can congratulate you, Josh Cobb, on such a fantastic program. And I love the fact that you're pushing outside the edges of the norm for just straight real estate coaching. I think we'll all do better with broadening our vision, and I congratulate you for that, mate.
That's very kind of you. You're too kind, Tim. It's been a real pleasure, and look forward to catching up with you again very soon. Thank you.
Thanks, mate. Thanks, Josh.
Thanks for listening to Real Estate Pros. If you like this episode, please subscribe and you'll be notified of new episodes. I'm Josh Cobb. Now go out and grow your business.